Comic Man, he's got the reading master plan. Grabs a book, it's alright, he saw a stain under his UV light. Look out, here comes the Comic Man. Is this rare? Listen, bud, what you just brought me is crud. But I read on the thread, the book was written by a celeb. Hey kid, you're talking to the Comic Man. On a Friday night, when the magic kids are late, he'll stay overnight, increasing his own mortality rate. Comic Man, Comic Man, friendly neighborhood Comic Man. Wealth and fame he's ignored, reading books is his reward. To him, comics are never boring, because he goes exploring. He is the Comic Man.
Hey everybody, what's going on? It's ScottyDoo32 here from This Week in Geek, and we are here with another podcast at the Comic Connection in Oakville, located at 490 Spears. Rich likes the little intro there. He's blushing. He's like, oh, my baby. She's famous. So, yeah, guys, so this week we are Robless as of now, because we're going to be talking about Magic the Gathering. I'm here with two guys, I think. One of them is, well, then again, I have long hair, so I can't make a long hair joke.
It's significantly longer than yours, though.
It is. It's a little impressive. Bit longer. Yeah. And these are two guys who play Magic the Gathering, so you can assume that they spend all their time in their basements, do nothing, they have no real friends, they talk to their cards.
Almost true.
Pretty accurate, I must say. So let's get these two to introduce themselves instead of just their commentary here. Yeah, if you saw them. Good thing we're doing... They have faces for radio, let me tell you that much. So, me. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Getty Tarian, and just been playing Magic for about 4 or 5 years.
I'm Alex Tarian, obviously Getty's brother, which is actually has been my nickname for a while actually.
And significantly taller.
Yeah, weird, I'm younger but taller.
Mailman.
Yeah. If my parents told me I adopted, I'd totally believe them. Yeah, I've probably been playing Magic for about as long as Getty. Yeah. We started around the same time.
Yeah, you started like 3 months after me.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty impressive, though. So, yeah, what have you guys been up to recently? I usually like to get that in the way so get a little more comfortable. So what have you guys been doing in the last week or 2 weeks or so?
Just been working. Working. Yeah? Yeah.
Sounds pretty fun.
No. It's not. Not
at all?
Fun. No, but I mean, I've been able to, I've been playing a lot of Madden 25. Just been doing a lot of the coaching things.
Did you go buy the expensive one so you can get the DirecTV?
Oh, yeah, DirecTV.
No, you can get...
I did hear, though, that it's a really good deal, though. You save like $130 or something.
But it's only online. You can't view it on TV. It's only through a web browser, but everyone hooks their... computers up to their TV anyway. It's not a big deal.
My TV doesn't actually have a cable where I play Madden 25, so I'd basically just be watching it.
Yeah, because it's like so it ends up being like $40 technically, and it's like usually $250. Yeah. I was hearing something.
You save a lot of money on it.
But they had a lot of issues on the first day, obviously, selling all those copies.
Yeah, they're like, we don't have the server size of this, do we?
Whoops, slight miscalculation.
So how about yourself, Alex?
I started school recently.
Oh, shit.
I'm a big boy going to college now.
Oh, my gosh.
And basically my whole life has been
smoking pot, sleeping, and masturbation.
Minus the first one, but the other two, copious amounts. Really, really, my life has been dominated by just work, Magic, and school recently.
Fair enough.
It's not a bad life.
Not too terrible, I must say. So, yeah, so we're going to get on this. As we said at the, top of the show here, we are talking about Magic the Gathering, or MTG, for those in the know. Yeah. So the reason
Cardboard crack, otherwise known as.
Yeah.
So the reason we're talking about this is because the new set is coming out. So
September 21st is the pre-release.
He's got his date, man. Pre-release.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. I've got to be there. Midnight, then the Saturday one. If Rich is going to do a Sunday one, I got to be there for the Sunday
one. He's got to have his buy a box promotion card, man. So let's just... I guess we should probably start off, because some people might not know. They might have heard of Magic and been like, oh, those neckbeards playing Magic over there. So let's just give them like a little, almost an overview kind of thing. Like, where would you start, really, besides the fact it's a collectible trading card game by Wizards of the Coast?
Yeah, it's a trading card game where the objective is to...
win, like most games.
Yeah, obviously.
But you both start at 20 life, you and your opponent, and the whole point is you're trying to get them to zero life. There are a few other win conditions, but the basic one is just get them to zero life.
And so you You play your lands, which you get a land per turn, and your lands produce mana, which will cast spells. You can summon creatures or
throw a lightning bolt at someone's face, you know, or at a creature. Like, there's tons of things you can do in the game.
So realistically, the name Magic suits this perfectly well because it really revolves around magic.
It almost feels like D&D if they made it a card.
Well,
game.
If you think about it, because
basically it is if you think of that aspect.
I'm pretty sure that's what Richard Garfield, the guy who
look at this guy dropping the name.
Yeah, Richard Garfield. PhD.
I heard that Magic was designed as a game for people to play in between D&D sessions. And now people get together and play Magic, and then they form D&D campaigns to play in between tournament days.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny how that works. But there's like a flavor to Magic as well. Basically, you're what's called a planeswalker, and your opponent's also a planeswalker, and you're using your spells and whatnot to defeat the enemy. And it's really cool because every card in the game has both a function inside of the game and a form outside of the game. So such as, you know, you can summon a little elf. And the elf does nothing, but the elf can give you more mana, right? And so the whole elven tribe has a sub-theme of making mana, and they're very ritualistic. So it's actually really cool that, like, you can just play the game, but there's also a whole storytelling.
There's the whole lore behind it. There's comics behind it, even novelizations, I'm pretty sure.
Yep. And every set of Magic cards they come out with has a story nowadays.
Yeah. Which I think that's a cool aspect of it. It's not just, hey, we're going to buy some cards. They actually try to have a continuity going on with wars and how the world will change due to who wins and stuff.
Yeah, back in the old days, it used to be just sets. They would just have, like, okay, here's all the cards. Nowadays,
here's Unhinged.
Well, to be fair, Unhinged was after the age of where they actually had storylines. Because, you know, there were things like Homelands. Legends. Sorry, Legends. The whole point was that there was going to be an all creature-based set based around having a bunch of Legends. That was the whole point of it, was to just have Legends everywhere. Common, uncommon, rare Legends. Yeah. And then they came up with Ice Age. The whole theme of that was everything's frozen over. They came up with the Snowland mechanic.
Yeah,
right.
So back then, still, it didn't really have a congruent story.
They tried, but recently
they've actually incorporated a story. The best example I can give is the Scars of Mirrodin block.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah. It's because, like,
with New Phyrexia and
started,
stuff like
that. Yeah, you started off on the plain of Mirrodin, and it's war-torn, and there's these people called the Phyrexians that were invading.
Basically Lovecraftian horrors.
So in the first set, it just sets up that there's the native Mirrens from Mirrodin, who are an entirely metal people, and then there's this new Phyrexian invasion that's coming along that's twisting all these natural things into these horrors. And then the second set that came out was Mirrodin Besieged, and that was right in the middle of the war, really. And so you had actually two factions in the game. There was cards that were designated as Mirrodin cards.
Yeah, they even have a watermark on them. And the best part was, the set was, I think, 249 cards. There was literally split down the middle, 50% Phyrexian and 50% Mirrodin cards, and then one Planeswalker who was not affiliated with anything. He was the 249th card. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, and then so they had the war-torn thing, and during the pre-release they made you choose a faction, right? So they bring the storytelling game into the tournaments, and then with the last set, it was unannounced for the longest time. And they told you it was going to be one of two things. It was either going to be Mirrodin Pure, where the Mirrens win the war, or New Phyrexia, where the Phyrexians won the war. And they left it up in the air until, I think, about a couple months before the pre-release, they finally said, guess what?
I think it was even, like, only, like, two.
Yeah, they said, like, guess what? The Phyrexians win the war.
Yeah, I think they did that with, like, it was basically, here's what happens, and now here's your first spoiler.
Yeah, and so they just incorporated this whole story where we became attached to the plane. Yeah. Where I remember I was a big Mirrodin guy. I loved
huge
the Mirrodins, and
I
was
this. Two brothers split down the middle.
Yeah, I know. I really, really, really wanted Mirrodin Pure.
They could tell me anything, and I'm going to believe.
I love New Phyrexia.
And he was a big New Phyrexian fan.
Oh my God, Phyrexian mana, so good.
Like, that's what I think so interesting is the fact that they go that. They have that much lore into it where it's like, okay, guys, one of these sides is going to win. It's going to change everything. Like, what happens here is going to change what happens in the future because now Mirrodin, like, it's Phyrexia now, man. Like,
yeah,
crazy shit like that.
And also, like, they leave it open to revisit the plane because there was a set originally called Mirrodin, mm-hmm. which was on the plane of Mirrodin, and Scars of Mirrodin was on the same plane, but just
many
now
years in the future.
Now with the Phyrexian invasion. So it was really cool, and they leave it open to going back there, potentially.
Another thing I think we should hit talking about an overview of the game is really the mechanics involved. Like, again, how we were talking about mana earlier. You have the five different planes you can use. You have your mountains, you have your swamps, your... I'm trying to remember.
Islands.
Right. Islands. I was going to say, I was like, islands, is water? Yeah. Something like that.
Then there's also plains and forests.
Yes, there we go.
I think you started out with plains. So let's just start.
I did. Let's do it again.
Okay.
So white, blue, black, red, green. There we
go.
Okay,
those are the five colors of mana. We have white producing lands, which are plains.
Plains.
We have blue producing lands, which are islands. We have black producing lands, which are swamps. Red producing lands that are mountains. And green producing lands that are forests.
See, because I was trying to remember the colors. I was like, color scheme.
They even have like a theme to them. Like white is all about law and order.
Exactly what I wanted to hit off.
Yeah,
that's
blue is
point.
All about...
blue is all about, like, your thoughts and your minds and being smarter than your opponent.
Yeah, black is about being, like, cruel, and it's sort of like a necromancer-type theme. There's a lot of graveyard recursion.
A lot of death
recursion.
And decay.
Yeah, lots of death, lots of, you know, even just, like, sort of self-harm to get stuff out of yourself. There's a card called Sign of Blood. You lose two life to draw two cards. Right,
so,
like,
yeah, you're trading one type of resource, which is your life, for another resource, which is cards.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's, like, red, which is very suicide. It's all about, like, trying to
say suicide, but it's very, like, angry and
yeah, the whole point is you're just trying to...
Blitzkrieg, basically. You're trying to take them out quickly. You don't want a long game.
Yeah,
and
ball
there's also,
lightning describes that perfectly.
Yeah, and there's also, like, burn spells, which is what you call, like, red spells that deal damage. They're called burn spells, and it's literally, like, you're burning something with fire.
Yeah, there's a card called Searing Spear. You literally throw a spear of fire at a creature and it dies.
Yeah.
Well, you hope it dies.
Yeah. And then green is all about, like, the primal side of things
and nature,
and you're summoning these giant beasts, and you get to feed off the land to get more mana and summon these giant beasts.
Yeah. Again, yeah, because that really creates the play style with the colors. Like, a lot of them people are like, you got your control decks, you got your, like,
but the control decks are usually based out of blue and white, so you're thinking of ways to protect law and order. Right?
Yeah.
Or you're using your thoughts to also destroy creatures. So it's usually blue-black control decks or blue-white control decks, and they usually feel really, really fluid together.
Which is, again, one of the cool things like that is it really depends on mixing and matching the different planes here. Because, again, they all offer different things. That is one of the coolest things I think about the game.
Yeah.
And sorry. Yeah. Because some of the other ones you have, like mill decks, like what are they? You have mill deck, you have a control deck, you have.
There's different.
I'm
archetypes.
Just doing like very the basic.
The
archetypes
three basic archetypes are control, aggro, and tempo.
I thought it was combo.
Combo. Yeah,
because there's even a rock paper scissors game in there.
Yeah, so basically, control is a deck that wants to stop your opponent from doing everything and slow down the game until you can. Finally get such an advantage that you can just play one big spell and end the game.
Yeah.
Whereas an aggro deck wants to play out their hand as quick as possible and just defeat your opponent before they have a time to just do anything.
Usually playing a lot of little creatures in order to deal as much damage. So, like, trying to put as many little dudes.
Like, again, you got goblin decks on mountain.
Like,
that's like a
decks,
perfect
like,
one. It's
trying
like,
to like, go like turn one goblin, turn two goblins, turn three two goblins, turn four goblins.
Throw
that
some
pumps
fireballs in there.
Yeah,
you got,
you're
like,
just
yeah,
you're just burning them out.
Trying to get that in there in the early game.
Yeah, and then you can kill your opponent before they have a chance to cast the spell.
So like a control deck in that matchup. Will feel great once it hits turn five and they're not dead. They're like, oh my lord, I have survived.
It's the late game and I'm not dead?
Yeah.
Wow, this is easy.
Yeah.
And then the aggro deck's like, oh god, I've hit turn five. How do I kill him?
And then the last archetype doesn't actually exist all the time, but it's what's called a combo deck, which is a deck that wants to use normally two cards that will create, like, two cards that when put together will do something amazing. Most of the time, it involves something infinite.
Yeah.
So yeah, you get all those crazy infinite like token deck combos. And
yeah,
stuff
where you
like
can
that.
Just in one turn literally say, I'm going to make an infinite number of guys.
Yeah,
like something that says, hey, tap this thing to to put a thing into play.
And then untap.
Then untap said thing to put another copy of the thing into play.
Repeat steps 1 and 2 as desired, right?
Yeah. You can be like, okay, I repeat that 150 times.
Yeah.
And then usually those things either have haste or they don't. And if they don't, even better for you. Like, mm-hmm. you're just like, I'm going to take all the time in the world to slowly kill you in one big turn.
So, yeah, and then we have some of the mechanics involved again with the game, like how you're saying, with haste. You have, you also have, sorry, I think one of the death mechanics, which my friend always screw me with, is poison counters and stuff like that.
See, poison counters is one of those ones that's block-specific.
Yeah.
There are certain block-specific ones.
Well,
that's
when we were playing back.
Yeah, right,
That was actually the Scars of Mirrodin block.
Yep, that's the one when I started
playing.
That
was the Scars of Mirrodin block, right? But, we have things from Innistrad, which was Morbid. So whenever a creature died, you would trigger the mechanic. There were...
You had, like what do you call it? What was the... It wasn't that long ago when you would... Was it Lifelink? Am I thinking Lifelink, or am I thinking of...
Lifelink has always been around.
I'm not thinking Lifelink then. When I could put a add two cards together. What was it again? Crap. It was a while ago.
I know there's currently Fuse cards.
No, this
you
one was
pay the
crap.
Fuse cost.
It's like you put a card down.
Champion? You're talking about putting a card on top of another card, and then once the card you have on top leaves, you get a creature back?
I'm trying to remember this. This is like trades here.
Yeah.
Jesus. So let's forget about what I was going to say.
First word.
I remember the block. It was at the end of the Innistrad block. It was Avacyn Restored.
Avacyn Restored.
Soulbond.
Soulbond, yeah, where you pair them together.
I thought it was a really fun one.
Oh, no, Soulbond is very powerful, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of decks have been based solely on that mechanic.
I thought that mechanic was so fun.
They're also evergreen words, like haste, like you mentioned earlier, vigilance, death touch, lifelink, trample, and I think now hexproof. So these are cards flying and reach.
Reach, yeah.
So these are all abilities that are written on cards.
It's fear.
That,
intimidate now.
Yeah. Sorry.
We can go on forever. Yeah. Literally, there is a huge list.
Yeah, but these are all ones that will most often just be printed on a card as just the word with no reminder text, and people will know what it has, right? So in some core sets specifically, because core sets are designed in order to bring in new players, mm-hmm. in core sets specifically, they'll usually have reminder text.
There we go. Pro tip of the day, if you're a new player, start to get by getting into the core set.
So thankfully we just had M14 come out. M14 was a pretty sweet one for people starting out. A lot of powerful effects.
It's a lot of good things for everyone, the competitive player and the casual player.
Yeah, that's always nice. Always, always nice.
Oh, young Pyromancer. so good.
Well, I think we've pretty much got that overview. I think we're pretty in-depth there, like going into, the different... We talked about the mana cost, that kind of stuff. We talked about the different...
We didn't talk about the speeds of the things, like creatures, sorcery, instant.
I think that's more into the rules of the game.
Yeah, that gets really in-depth
into
it.
But I mean, hey, you wanna come by the store, find Getty, I'll teach you about that.
You'll take your own back.
Well, another.
Hey, as long as I get cards out of it.
A quick thing to add: another great way to get into the game and to really learn and start to develop your skills is Duels of the Planeswalkers.
I was actually going to say the games.
Those games are also tons of fun.
Because everything's already pre-made for you. You're not. I don't know if the newest one, if it actually
you can
did
actually
it finally give you the option. Besides
you can
the
build
extra
a,
cards,
you can build
you can
a sealed deck, which is nice. You basically build it from the scratch, lands and everything.
Oh, I didn't know. Is that only in Fortnite?
Only an M14. Duels of the Planeswalkers.
I haven't played that one yet.
Yeah,
but that's a cool one because it gives you all those decks. You get a chance to basically play almost every type of deck there are. There's little challenges that you can start to learn advanced techniques. Cost you, 10, 15 bucks? If you're on Steam, summer sale, man. Fall sale's coming up soon. You probably get the game for, 50 cents. Really, you should check those games out if you're really curious. Very low investment cost, for sure, because this game is not cheap. That's one for sure we'll talk about sooner or later.
It was arguably, low-costed. I mean, the best card of the time would be maybe $20, and you didn't always need four of it, right?
Yeah.
But right now, I guess because of the size, aka the demand, the prices are going to be a bit jacked up. Whenever a new Planeswalker gets spoiled, because people love Planeswalkers, they're usually in the realm of 40, 50 bucks. And that's a lot of money, especially when you're trying to pick up a set, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think if you're not too sure about it, really pick up those games, because that, again, is going to give you the basic flavor of the game. And if you like the gameplay style, then go pick up, you can get a deck.
Oh, there are also starter decks that are really playable, especially if you get the game day decks.
Event decks.
Event decks.
Those ones are nice.
The event
decks are designed to be tournament ready.
Yeah, and they're usually powerful. I mean,
they
may
cost
still get
a little bit more.
Yeah, but I mean, what's it's like what, $25, and then you can spend maybe $10 more to like.
But again, if you're just getting into it,
yeah, but I mean, sometimes okay, so that's $30.
The starter decks are really
$30, and you can usually play that. You can usually play that for like a good 4 or 5 months. You get 4 or 5 months, one like once, twice, maybe even 5 times a week if you really just play with your friends all the time, of enjoyment out of $30.
Okay.
Seems like a good investment, right?
Well, again, but we're just talking about someone who just wants to get into it.
Yeah, like, and that's
again,
what I mean. Like,
well, again, that's why I was just saying they have the game. Yeah. And I think that is a good $15. You like it or you don't. You spend $15. Yeah. You spend $35. You like it or you don't. You're like, oh shit.
Yeah, but you can still resell them. A lot of these event decks have cards that are
$35 in this day and age is $15 in my time, dude.
Yeah,
we get it. You're old.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on here. Let's talk about our personal history of the game. Mine is pretty short. Realistically, I'm not that hardcore into it. Me and my bud, a while ago, it was actually during the Mirrodin block is when I got into it. He'd been playing for years. This guy's got decades of cards and stuff like that. Long time he's been playing, so he's like, Scott, get into this. I was like, okay, I kind of need a hobby to keep me occupied right now. And, you know, if you, your brother, and our friends are all going to play it, you know what, I don't want to be the odd man out here. I'll toss a few bucks at it. A few $100 later, and I just have cards sitting in my room because we just haven't had the time to play, so I kind of have gotten out of it. See, I told you it'd be brief history for me. Yeah. That's basically it.
A few $100. Those were the days, huh?
Yeah, a few $100.
A few $100 on my first set, I remember that. $20 buying like $6 packs over at Roger's Video, because I'm like, oh, there are packs here, that's amazing.
Like, well, it's the set I've never heard of. I can't use the cards? Okay.
So let's get into both your personal histories, because I think you have a long history. We could do a show on itself dedicated to your history here.
Well, if we're going to talk about history misplays, yeah. but I started out basically in high school. There was a guy who was friends with. He was one of those guys that was like one of those gigantic nerds. But and I was
for those guys, huh?
Yeah. But I wasn't one of those yet. I was. Yeah. I still played a lot of video games and like I enjoyed reading nerdy things. But
I wasn't a giant nerd at the time. I was just playing video games, reading.
Yeah,
nerdy
but I mean,
things.
Like, I mean, I was playing like Madden.
As in, he was casual. Like,
sports gamer.
The sort of guy who
I did log 360 hours on Oblivion, but like
basically sort of gamer who would play Call of Duty and kill you respectfully and not insult your mother.
Yeah,
but he insulted your mother after he got to know you.
Yeah. This guy was also very elaborate in his descriptions, and he always described this game he was playing. He was like, oh man, I was doing this, and then he would start describing these really wacky ways of how he would go about these things, and I'm like, this sounds really fun. And then another one of my friends got into the game with him, and I was like, oh man, that's kind of cool. And then one day, I think I was in the middle of an exam, I went, I'm like, hey, can I just play one of your decks? Yeah, sure. So I learned the mechanics of the game. After that, I was hooked. So I went, and
it's all
I just,
downhill from there.
Yeah, I just went out, and I just bought a bunch of cards, and I went and built my first... it was back in charge of Alara blocks, so there was the Unearth mechanic,
and
I loved it.
I remember as soon as he got into it, I started like thinking about it, and at first I was like, whoa, this is some game, blah, blah, blah. And then once he stopped trying to get me into it, I was like, oh, this is actually kind of fun. Yeah. And so I started a little while after him, and yeah, we had a collection of cards, and we both had our decks that we built. Mine was Bant, which is blue, white, and green, and there was a mechanic at the time called Exalted, which was... basically, each of your guys can get exalted. And whenever one of your creatures attacks alone, for each guy that has exalted, he gets stronger. So, it's basically
rally
like,
all your support behind it.
Yeah, you rally all your support behind this one guy. And
I would lose to it every single time. My dude who would come back from my graveyard and do really sweet things could not beat this one dude attacking me all the time. Also didn't help that, you know, you kind of opened up one of like the most standard playable cards, Finest Hour.
No, I never opened that. I remember I desperately...
He told you he opened it to make you jealous.
No, I remember...
He got on the street corner.
I remember I had no idea about it, and then I had heard about it, and I was like, that's amazing. I want it. And you're like, oh, okay, that's like $15. And I was like, that's way too much money. I'm like,
oh, man, I remember,
that.
Remember those days.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I remember I had wanted that, and I wanted Rafika the Many, and I just didn't get them because they're too expensive at the time. But I think you ended up getting me a Finest Hour for, like, my birthday one time or something like that. And I was over the moon. It was great. Those were the days.
Yeah. when you could be elated by dollar cards. Like, oh, my God, this card does that? I want it.
It costs 12 mana. I don't care.
But what's if mana? I cast it.
If I cast it, I win. You're not going to cast it. But if I do. And
Quicksilver Amulet. Everyone's favorite card.
From there, like, we kept playing mostly casually, and then we started going out to tournaments. At the time, we hadn't really invested much into the game, so we didn't have...
There was no crippling credit card debt. There was none of that stuff yet.
Yes. We didn't have, like, a really, really good deck, so when we went out and played the constructed tournaments, we wouldn't win much, but it was fun. And we started getting into more of what's called limited, right? Which because it's constructed and there's limited. Limited is where you open up booster packs and make decks out of it. And we started getting into that more because what I always used to say, I'm like, oh, well, I don't have money to spend on these expensive decks. But now at limited, it's all about your skill, right? Like how you build your deck with the cards that everyone has access to. So I really started getting into limited, and I guess my history of getting into like the competitive side was all thanks to channelfireball.com. And one...
Actually a really great resource.
One player in specific, Luis Scott Vargas, he's a pro Magic player, one of the most famous. And he used to do draft videos where he'd take you through every single draft pick, and then he'd take you through building the deck, and he'd take you through playing the games. And he'd do it basically, you get to watch with him as he goes through the whole draft. And I learned so many valuable skills from him, and it really improved my game, and I started doing better at tournaments. I started getting more dedicated to the game, and I started winning more. I started buying more cards. I started getting more serious into the game because it was so much fun, and yeah, it just spiraled out of control from there. And
well, I wouldn't say out of control.
Out of control. It always goes out of control.
Tons of friends through this game.
Well, I was gonna get to that eventually.
We're talking about monetary here. Got out of control.
Currently, you're only on year two of your 6-year career.
Actually, no. That whole thing goes all the way up to now, basically. Because I just keep going to tournaments and keep getting better. And
which I'm guessing is why you really picked this as your hobby kind of thing. Like the friends you're saying and tournaments and stuff.
Especially since there are a lot of casual formats. Ones that aren't in tournaments. Yeah. You just sit down and you play with your friends. Like the Commander format, which there's a new product coming out in September, which I'm really stoked for. You know, new cards, only playable in Eternal formats and stuff.
And every time you come out to a tournament, and because there's tournaments every week here.
Multiple times a week.
Oh, yeah.
Like the big one, you got Friday Night Magic, which is like the big one that happens weekly.
Here at Comic Connection, there's standard tournaments on Wednesdays. There's modern tournaments on Thursdays. Then there's draft on Friday. And then...
standard modern. Or it's like standard draft or something like that.
Yeah, I think that you go standard again on Saturday and draft on Sunday. And so there's so many opportunities to play. And as you come out, you start coming out every week to play in the tournaments every week because it's so much fun. And then other people start coming out every week. And you see these people all the time.
And eventually you'll just be like, hi.
Yeah, you start to say hi to them, and you start to get to know them, and you...
start to love people like Ollie.
Yes, there's quite a few regulars here, and we all know each other, and we're all friends, and, you know, eventually those friendships inside the store, like, can travel outside the store. Now, you know, there's a whole group of people that will get together, and we'll just, you know, go out for wings sometime, or get together, and play
it's
rock
like
band
a lot of camaraderie, like, especially when you come to your comic shop. Like, again, Comic Connection, like, there's pretty big, turnouts, it seems, like, especially when you got, like, the big events, like your pre-releases and release nights.
Pre-releases?
Back when they had the old store, like, it got to the point where, like, you almost had to play outside.
Yeah, I remember for the new Phyrexia pre-release, he rented out the building across the street.
And we had a whole building to ourselves, and that was just
loved it.
Opened
like a thing of foil ginger tax.
And so now I opened a car, and that was great. And now we're here over this. No, I traded it right away because I knew it would drop in value.
Okay.
And now we're over here in the new store, and it's giant. And so you don't really have to worry about space all that much. But even at pre-releases, there's still a lot of guys.
You're still getting like over 60.
Yeah, we're probably gonna have to Rich is probably gonna have to set up an extra 10 tables outside of the already like 30, 40 tables inside the typical play hall.
Yeah, sometimes we get upwards of 100 people to come out to these big tournaments, like pre-releases. Like the Theros pre-release should be pretty big inside.
Again, because it's the start of a new block.
Not to mention, the story is insane.
Yeah, it's a highly anticipated
I don't know the story. Like, I don't really know the story at all.
We can get into that. But it's a highly anticipated set. Yeah. So The pre-release is on the 21st,
yeah, 21st of September.
And Rich actually holds midnight openings. So literally, as soon as you are able to play the game, we're playing it here. So if you come out on the Friday, like the 20th, at like 11:30 and get here, get ready, come out, play at midnight on the Saturday.
First off, there's going to be tons of people already just playing the game casually. So if, even if you just need to learn the game, we'll help you learn.
And if, especially if you get here, even, like most people start coming here like 10:30, like just to hang out.
Some
and get
people
ready.
play the draft from
Friday Night Magic.
Then they go
and then
eat, and then they come back to play the pre-release.
That's dedication.
That's what I'm doing. Actually, I got to take a nap. I'm opening on Friday.
So yeah, if you're not too sure, like those are good events to come out to. Those are the first events, actually really the only events, because I was like, shit, I don't know if I know this game that well. I'm not going to come to these tournaments with like
a crap deck. Hey, you want to learn, we can teach you.
Oh, we can.
Oh, I when I came to deck building, I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, I love deck building. Sealed decks? Yeah. So much fun.
But yeah, but you come to previous, that's the nice thing, is that you're all on a even playing ground, which is, okay, quote unquote even playing ground, in the sense that,
you know, sometimes people
all the cards
those
are random. No one's gonna have a deck that's already overpowered. They might. They might pull nicely and
you
have
know,
a good
someone,
deck.
Someone may open three Gargans that, you know, turn into Wraths, and they just have all the removal.
Not even like, Wrath, my friend. Plaguewind.
Oh, you're right. It is Plaguewind.
Yeah.
Well, okay. It says all non-Gorgons.
Yeah, true.
So you literally only keep your Gorgons.
Look at
okay.
this. Going on tangents, man.
I digress.
We are really into this game.
I know you guys are, and that's the enthusiasm you have for it is, like, so great, because there's a lot of, you don't really see a lot of enthusiasm for certain things people have. Some people knock somebody like, oh, shit, you like that. But if it gets your enthusiasm going and your excitement for something, I don't care what you like. Like, if you like something, that's great. If it gets you, again, this is not your stereotypical, this is not 1970s nerds playing D&D. I do role-playing and stuff, and it's not that. You have, like, 100 people here who are playing a card game together, all from young kids playing to people in, like, their 40s who are married with kids. Like, I found out when my high school teachers used to go to tournaments all the time, and I was like, it really, there's, the age gap is non-existent. And that's the nice thing, is the fact that you can find anybody from all walks of life coming to one thing that they're excited
and
about.
And we all speak the same language.
Yeah, it's tap that land.
Yeah. I tap that.
Damn right you would.
I'd untap it then. Then move to my upkeep, and then, oh, my bad. Now we're explaining phases.
Draw phase.
I thought we weren't going to go through
now
those.
We're not going through the rules here, guys. But yeah, so, like, we should probably talk about that, because that's a big thing, is the new block coming out, the Theros block. And again, I don't really, even when I played, I never went into spoilers on it. Like, I know a lot of people would. Yeah. I kind of liked it being fresh, and I'd be like, oh, shit, what's this? Yeah. I had a very ignorant, in a sense, or very innocent look. I pick cards. I don't know what's in the block. I might know a good card. I'm like, oh, shit, this is pretty good. Yeah. Very blind to it. But I know a lot of people are into spoilers. They want to build those decks. The second they're announced, spoilers, what's going to be it, they're already building their decks.
Oh, yeah, I've already got...
He's already got three decks built.
Just one that I've been tweaking as spoilers come out that I'm planning on playing. But
I know I'm super stoked for the whole devotion mechanic. The other thing is it's not so much just what you want to build in the standard format or the modern format, legacy. It's not what you want to see these cards do in the actual format.
Mm-hmm.
It's also you
their
want
potential
to be,
in the future.
You also want to be prepared for the pre-release, right?
Yeah.
So you want to know what cards am I going to look for? Which card seems really good and limited? Like, right? Like, what are these? What card's going to be an absolute bomb? How are you going to answer people? Like, you just want to know what cards are out there.
Yeah.
So that way, when you sit down against another opponent and he goes turn one forest, you're like, what green spells does he have that are really threatening, right?
Yeah, okay.
That's getting into like the really advanced stuff.
Yeah, I know, but those are things
you like.
One
thing I always say is that the difference between a good player and a great player is a good player will be really good and know exactly what their deck does.
But a great player will guess what the other person's deck is
going to be
doing.
Yeah, a great player will know exactly what your deck does.
So let's get into the plot of this, because again, you guys are hyping this about how this plot is going to blow your mind, man.
My favorite thing, I love Greek mythology, and that's what this set is all about.
That's what I was reading about, and I was maybe I'll get back in with the Greek mythology.
I know Wizards of the Coast actually came out with an article. Basically, every time they come out with these new blocks, they explain the world. I think I was doing something really important at the time, and I took 30 minutes out of my day to read about what each god and what all the cities did.
Yeah.
That this world that we're not even going to touch the cities. The cities don't exist inside the cardboard.
And yeah, it's just
it's not like you play, you know, your like Thassa's Guild. Like you don't even play Thassa's Guild. Like that's not a card. It just is a place you want to know about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the whole set is based off Greek mythology. So you have gods and you have chimeras and minotaurs and heroes. And so everything is based around that idea. So in this world of Theros, there are five distinct gods, each one for each color of mana. That's how things work in Magic normally. There is the white god is Heliod, god of light. There's the blue god, Thassa, goddess of the sea.
Basically, it's literally just, you know,
a giant fish.
Yeah, but it's
and there, then there's the water, Erebos, yeah. God of the dead. He's the black god. The green god is Nylea,
yeah.
Goddess of the hunt. And the red god is Purphoros, god of the forge. And so each of the gods has all their stuff that they're doing, and each of them also has a weapon. Each weapon has been turned into a card. That's really cool. And so the plot of it is, I believe, I could be wrong on this, but from what I've heard is there's a place called the Nyx, which is where all of the gods are from. It's sort of an alternate dimension where the gods exist, and there's some being in Nyx that's trying to usurp the gods and take over all of Nyx and Theros. And so right now, in this set, it's just setting up the world, and I guess in the next two sets, we'll get to find out exactly what happens and who this new adversary is, how we're going to defeat him.
Yeah.
One other cool thing is that Elspeth, the champion from, I believe her home plane is Alara.
Yeah.
She's in this set now, and the lore is that she came in, she didn't want to be a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Well, too bad. You're super powerful. You're a planeswalker. You're going to be called on to be a hero. And she has a card in the new set, and she's featured on some of the artwork. That's one thing we didn't talk about is the artwork.
Oh, man.
Man, trust me. This is such a huge franchise, the fact that you could dedicate an hour to each individual thing. Like, artists. Like, you could go even that deep into it. I see a twinkle in his eye.
I was just going to mention there are certain full art lands. So most lands have a tiny border that sort of show you what land, what it taps for. But there are full art ones. They've only ever been printed twice. Three times.
Unglued, Unhinged, and Zendikar.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. But let's just talk about the Unhinged one. Because those are, I think, like $5-$6 a piece for a basic land.
Yeah.
A land that you can get in any other pack.
It's just the art style. Right? It's
not even just the art style. It's John Avon specifically, that artist. Okay. The Zendikar.
Everyone loves him.
Zendikar. They had four different arts for each mountains had four different arts.
Yeah.
The Avon one is like a buck or two more just because of the artist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the art in this game is just...
It's stellar.
Gorgeous.
Like, it's really well done, especially the amalgamation of artists. Again, each set, the art, I'd say, really reflects the set's story arc, and it's theme. That's what I really enjoy.
And it always reflects, like, what the card does.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's...
If you're looking at, let's say, a white card, you're going to see a lot of bright and very heroic poses done.
And angelic things.
Very much so.
Like, in the new set, there's a card called... Gift of Immortality, and just like I said, the flavor of this set is amazing, and so it's an enchantment you can put on your creature, and then when it dies, the creature comes back, and then the enchantment can be put back on the creature. So it's really hard to kill the creature. You have to kill it twice. And so the art on that one is this hero, and he's standing on top of a cliff, and he's just like pointing his sword out heroically, and in the background, the clouds are a silhouette of him. And so it just gives it that feel of how this hero is immortal.
This hero is going to come back twice.
Yeah.
There are two heroes on this card. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point.
Yeah. And yeah, the art is just insane.
Again, when you're talking about the cards, like, are there any new mechanics specifically coming out with this set? The like big mechanics that are coming out? Like, you see certain sets have really big new ones, like we were talking about Soulbound and stuff. Yeah. And is there any ones on this set coming out? Like,
yeah, the two new ones are Heroic and
Devotion.
There are non-keyworded ones. Like, I know the ordeals have a cycle, but they're not really...
So there's Devotion, which is really, again, it captures the theme of the set, and it's...
Like, devotion to gods and like that.
Well, it's actually devotion to the colors. Yes, devotion to the colors. So basically, there's mana symbols on each magic card, and... So you count the cards that you have in play, you count the mana symbols on all of them, that's what your devotion to that color is. So the more spells you cast of that color, you have a higher devotion.
Okay.
Well, permanence.
Yeah, permanence, but like the flavor of it is, like the more things you control that have that color, is your devotion to that color.
So, like, if you have three cards in play, one has one green mana symbol in the play, and then one has two green mana symbols, and the third card has one green mana symbol, you have a current devotion to four, right, to green.
These things do many cool things. Like, there's a card that, like, when it comes into play, you get a creature for each devotion you have.
Mm-hmm.
There's also
one that adds mana equal to your devotion to something. One deals damage each opponent equal to your devotion.
And I
one puts tokens into play equal to your devotion. That card's insane. I love it.
There's two of them, actually, that do that. There's the Merfolk in blue and the Demon.
I meant the Merfolk one. I love that Merfolk one. I know he just dies to a Doomblade and all those tokens disappear, but I still love it. It's so sweet. He literally just drops down and then turns the water around him into elementals.
Yeah, and that, like, is really cool.
And as soon as he drops dead, the water falls. It's like waterbender.
And
it's
one
sweet.
Other cool thing that they've done in this that normally there are, like, great figures in Magic sets that don't really normally turn them into cards that well, but in this set, each of the gods has a card. And they're enchantment creatures. So enchantment's a card type that's just kind of like a presence that you put onto the battlefield and does something to your cards. But with the gods, they're an enchantment creature, but they don't come to life. They don't become creatures unless you have the devotion to support them.
Unless you devote yourself to that god, they will not work for you.
Yeah, so basically, if you play down the god but you have no devotion, it's just an enchantment. Mm-hmm. It'll just do something. One of the cards lets you, you know, manipulate the top of your deck a little bit. Another one buffs all your, or no, he gives all your creatures vigilance. Another one, his spear gives
you
a buff. But if you have enough devotion to that god, they'll become a creature and fight for you, which I think is so cool. They did a really,
sounds like a
real really
big
job,
late game kind of mechanic. That's
Okay,
you're right. That's
like,
true. I'm
specifically
thinking
Nylea, god of the hunt.
Like, how much is the devotion do you need for?
I believe devotion is for each of them is four.
Okay,
is it four?
Five.
Five. Okay, but still, like,
the god does count as one itself.
Yeah, right. The gods themselves count because it's permanent to control. The best part is those little mana elves we talked at the start of the podcast. We play one of those. Then there's another card that's really aggressively costed that has two of those green mana symbols.
Yeah.
Then, since we don't have five mana come the fourth turn, we can play another dude who, when he comes into play, he gets much bigger permanently, equal to your devotion.
Yeah, so...
And then you play Nylea on the turn after, and you have devotion.
Yeah.
And she's a six mana. She's a 6/6 for four mana. 6/6 is huge.
Four mana is pretty low cost for that.
That's the other thing, right? Like...
But the reason they're able to print them at such a low cost for such a high power is because you do need the devotion as well.
Yeah, so some people might, you know, put math in there and be like, well, the cost of this for her over time, yada, yada, yada.
My other favorite thing about the whole gods and just generally things that are enchantment X, is they have stars in their border.
Yes.
The whole point of that being is that is how they represent Nyx. So Nyx is bestowed upon the gods. All the gods have this starry inside. You'll see, like, in their skin, you'll see some stars up like the neck.
Constellations
or
and stuff
Yeah,
like
and
that.
Around their border, there's also stars in it. And a lot of, there's also, like, bestow. That's the other mechanic.
And also monstrous. I was going to get into that. I was going to start.
Let's get into bestow then.
Well, no, so, I was going to talk about heroic first.
Yeah, because we mentioned heroic. So let's talk about heroic first so we don't forget. And, then
it does segue perfectly into bestow. So heroic is a mechanic that's on certain creatures, and it's activated when you target something with a spell. So there's one card called Anax and Symmede. It's a hero, and it's a legendary creature. And whenever you target it with any spell, so this can be an instant or a sorcery or an enchantment.
Or an activated ability.
Well, true. But it has an effect. On this specific card, it's all your creatures get +1/+1 trample. So if you are able to target that, it lets out a heroic battle cry, I guess, and makes all your other creatures stronger.
Fights harder, and they fight through.
Yeah, and there's other things that are like... when you target it, you get to tap something down. I think there's one that when you target, you draw a card.
Yeah, there's one. The one that taps down is even better because they stay tapped during their untaps.
Yeah.
So basically, you get to tap it down for two turns.
The only problem I find with an effect like this, most of the cards are good or decent creatures, but then you also have to try to balance having enough good creatures and then having enough effects that target
them. If we had a repeatable target effect, it'd be nice. If it was just like tap, target creature gets +1/+1, that'd be nice.
There's Zephyr Charge, right? But
no,
it might be good enough.
Does Zephyr Charge is like an enchantment or an artifact?
One in a blue enchantment. One in a blue, target creature gets flying to one turn.
Well, that card's insane right now. Just heroic.
Is it a spell or ability? I'll check.
Oh, you're right. Because if it is just spell, then yeah, that doesn't
work.
Yeah,
no, it's just spell.
Oh.
Abilities don't work. I know.
Yeah, okay.
Our sweet deck is gone now.
This heroic ability, I think, is just getting worse and worse. I like it. It's a really sweet idea. I like it. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. It makes your creatures, you know, feel better for being targeted, for being the one you want to help out.
Yes.
But
I think of the...
Unfortunately, there are just too many one-time effects.
Of the heroic ones, I think that the white cards are the best. Like, you got...
Well, again, that goes with the white, like, it's, what do you call it?
White does have a lot of enchantments, typically. Yeah.
Like, for example...
And the fact of it being upholding law and order, you think heroic goes hand in hand with that, so that's why
they
went that path.
And it's cool that you're not going to see many heroic abilities in black.
Yeah.
Which is typically more underhanded,
more evil,
right?
You got, like, the necromancy and stuff, which is not seen as heroic or godly.
Yeah.
So for instance, we have one card that I think actually might be pretty decent, especially in an aggressive deck, Fabled Hero.
That's the heroic.
3 mana, 2/2 double strike. As soon as you target it with anything, you put a 1/1 counter on it. It becomes a 3/3 double strike.
Isn't there one that's also like a 1 drop that does the same thing and it's just stupid?
Yeah, Favored Hoplite. It's 1 mana, 1/2. Whenever you cast a spell that targets it, you put a 1/1 counter on it, and then you prevent all damage that would be dealt to it this turn.
Oh, yeah, the one where you just cast Stave Off on it, and you feel like a god?
Yeah, so you can just blow people out in combat with that. Yeah. And I think, of the heroic cards, I think the white ones are probably the best.
Yeah, but they also fit it the most.
I don't see it being very good constructed-wise.
Yeah.
There might be one or two cards that are okay.
Even in limited, I feel like you're just going to get too many one-time effects.
No, I like it in limited, though, because in limited there's enough effects that make it decent, especially with the ordeals. Because the ordeals...
But even then, think about it this way. Cast an ordeal. That's one trigger. Then I'm going to pile it on. Then they go, like, unsummon. And you're like, well, I wasted all those cards.
There's not that many unsummon things in this format. So though, now that I think about it, unsummon does get better in the format. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, you don't really need that many, especially with the ordeals. Because, like, especially the Hoplite, the one drop, when you target it, you get a 1/1 counter. You cast the ordeal, you get a 1/1 counter. Attack, you get a 1/1 counter. Then you only need one more to pop the ordeal. The ordeal, of course, being...
I thought the ordeal said when you put the third counter, not
whenever enchanted creature attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Then if it has 3 or more +1/+1 counters on it, you sacrifice the ordeal.
Well, that's just going to be really bad for Colonian Hydra. Put it on. Oh, no, it just popped.
Still not bad.
Yeah.
But I think mostly you'll have heroic. If there's a constructed deck, I think it has to be on something that are really good with targeting. Something like
But they need Bestow. A hexproof one. But like...
No, but I'm saying something like Bestow. Bestow is a mechanic from the set, which is...
Look at that segue. That was professional right there, man.
I thought of that a while ago. Bestow is used on creatures. In this set specifically, there's only ever been one other enchantment creature. There's enchantment creatures, which are both enchantments and creatures, obviously, that you can play them as a creature, or you can pay their bestow cost. So if you play it as a creature, you get the creature.
Yeah.
But if you play it with bestow, you pay the bestow cost, which is ordinarily going to be more than the creature, and you can enchant the creature onto another one.
Okay.
So you basically play a battled Hoplite, and you bestow another card on there, like, let's say, choosing a random one, Nimbus Naiad. So you pay 7 mana, or sorry, 5 mana, you bestow the Nimbus Naiad onto the battled Hoplite. So the way it's worded is, as long as the spell will resolve, it'll be enchanting that creature. And so this is a 2/2 flyer, the creature gets +2/+2 and has flying. So essentially you're combining the two creatures, right? You're adding the one creature onto the other. But the way bestow is worded is, if it ever stops being enchanted onto the creature, it becomes a creature itself. So for instance, you put it on the battled Hoplite.
Mm-hmm.
If your opponent can kill the battled Hoplite, guess what? you still have that creature that you bestowed on.
That's nice.
Basically, this just fixes the whole problem with auras, like the ordeals we were talking about earlier. The whole thing with the ordeals is you're sort of going all in. You are putting it on your creature, and you are hoping that it does all that it's supposed to do, and that you don't get it your creature killed, returned, or just make the thing fall off.
Yeah.
But what's awesome about bestow is it fixes that problem, because if the target becomes illegal while it's being cast, aka your creature gets removed somehow, then it still comes into play as a creature, right? You just paid too much for it.
Yeah.
The other thing is it also gives your creature pseudo haste, so it allows the creature you're bestowing onto it to basically deal its damage this turn, provided the creature you enchant also gets to deal damage.
Yeah.
And even if they kill it, you still get a creature.
Yeah. That's right? That's like a pretty good defense too, because like, oh, you killed my first. Sometimes when you get, oh shit, all my creatures are dead. But if you're bestowing upon it, I can see sometimes that working in your favor. Like, okay, I'm gonna block with this guy. He gets destroyed, but I still bestow, and I still have my second character.
Yeah. Like,
you know what? So I'm not left.
What I just realized is, what happens with Wrath? If your creature is bestowed,
I believe
you'd still get the creature.
Yeah, because I believe it's on the way an aura.
The way it reads is, if you cast this card for its bestow cost, it's an aura spell with enchant creature. It becomes a creature again if it's not attached to a creature. See, so if you put it onto your creature and they Wrath the board, you still get a guy.
You can even do that to your own creatures. Play your Omen Reader, bestow your 4/4 dude, just crash to like flood out the board because I really need to win this game. And you're like, Supreme Verdict. Wipe the board, 4/4 still, beat.
Yeah, right? But the problem with bestow is that it does cost a lot of mana for a lot of these spells.
There are some really effective ones, though.
There are, like, I think of the good bestow spells.
There's the 4/2 flash.
Talking about constructed here, I do like the Celestial Archon, that being 5 mana, 4/4, flying, and first strike. I think that's really good because it's good as a blocker and an attacker as well. And if you can bestow something with it, it'd be really good. Another great bestow card that I really like is in black, a color we haven't been talking that much. It's called
Night Howler.
Is it called Night Howler? Yes, Night Howler.
A point for getting.
It's 1/2 black. It's
Mortar War, if you know.
Plus X plus X, where X is the number of creature cards in all graveyards. So as the game goes on, you know, you're trading back and forth, you get this big creature. The good thing I like about Night Howler is the bestow cost is only one more than the playing cost. So
you either get to give it pseudo haste for one more mana.
Yeah.
So
you're not waiting around the whole time.
You can also just bestow your guy. If there's no creature cards in the graveyard, you can also just play it as an aura and just swing and hope for something to die. Even if your creature dies, you still get a 1/1.
That's true, yeah.
Because due to state based actions, it's dead when it comes into play.
Yeah, if they unsummon it, you're just dead.
then you feel really lore. Gross. Well, it's not gonna be. It's gonna be Voyage's End. They're gonna scry one too.
So I guess we've talked about.
Is there one more mechanic?
There is.
Oh.
We've talked about Devotion, which is good for all the colors. We've talked about Heroic, which is mostly Bane, based out of white.
So we've talked about gods. We've talked about heroes. But what do they fight?
They fight monsters. Monstrous is another mechanic. It's based mostly out of black and green and red, which is really big creatures. So what Monstrous is you can play the creature.
100-hand one. Card's sweet.
True, 100-hand one. The flavor on that one. We'll get to that. So you play a card like, let's say, Heathonia the Cruel, alright? Heathonia the Cruel is a 6-mana, 4/6 with Death Touch. But it has a keyword on it called Monstrous. And what Monstrous is, it's an ability you can cast for its monstrous cost. Heathonia has Monstrosity 3 for 8 mana. So you pay 8 mana. And then you get 3+1+1 counters on it because it's monstrous.
It's now monstrous. It's huge.
It's gone from just a normal scary 4/6 death touch to a monstrously scary 4/6 death touch.
Well, 7/9.
Well, yeah, it becomes a 7/9 now. And so
we don't put +1/+1 counters and forget to do math.
I do. And
can't
every
wait
time
you lose a game after doing that. Wipe your board. Attack for 4.
So not only does it make your creature bigger, each monstrous thing has an effect.
Yeah.
For Heathonia the Cruel, the effect is when Heathonia the Cruel becomes monstrous, destroy all non-Gorgon creatures.
There's also one thing you have to note about becoming monstrous. You cannot become monstrous more than once.
Right, yes.
So literally, when you
can't just keep putting 8-8 and getting 3-3-3-3 every turn.
You can't
growing your creature.
You can't go to another form and say, this isn't even my final form. That is your final form.
Yeah, this isn't Frieza here, man.
Yeah.
The reminder text says, if this creature isn't monstrous, put X11 counters on it, and it becomes monstrous.
What I'm trying to say is Goku would now fight this.
Yes,
he would. Not even after 72 episodes of making that Super Ball, man.
73. Get your math together.
I know. One of them wasn't aired here. That's why.
So yeah, monstrous is a really cool mechanic, I think.
And so are we just saying the monstrous? So you're saying, can it affect my other creatures and make other creatures monstrous? Is that what you're saying as
Unfortunately,
well?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay, I thought that's what I heard you say when you say 1-1. Like, okay.
Yeah, no.
In general, it's pay X for.
Yeah,
someone.
it's only affects the one card, right?
I wasn't sure if there's a card where it's like you can make other creatures.
That would be really sweet. Hey,
everything
you know
else
what?
Is
to
monstrous.
To be fair, this set is not fully spoiled, so there could be like an enchantment that's like Nyx, like, and it just all of a sudden it's like pay X, all your each creature has X
for like three
monstrous.
Turns.
No,
well, no, just be
like, how gross would it be to have like let's just say a 5-mana sorcery that says put 1/+1/+1 counter on a target creature, it becomes monstrous. Just being able to activate monstrous cards for less thing, right? Like,
yeah. So
like
it has monstrous, you pay 1/1, and now you activate its monstrous ability.
Yeah, like, one card that I really like that I think might actually see constructed play here is Polukranos, the World Eater.
Unicron.
I don't like Polukranos.
It
just gets Doombladed too easily.
If they don't Doom, like, in creature matchups, it's going to be insane. It's a 4-mana 5/5.
Which is already insane.
Yeah, it's so aggressively costed. And then it has XX green, so you have to pay 2 for each instance of X. It has Monstrosity X, right? So the creature becomes monstrous, you get X. And when it becomes monstrous, you deal X damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures your opponents control.
Mm-hmm. And then they fight back.
So when Polukranos becomes monstrous, he's going to fight
think of this,
all of
think
your
Think of the
guys.
Scene from Hercules in which he starts fighting the heads.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what it feels like whenever Polukranos becomes monstrous.
This big thing becomes giant and attacks all your creatures, and they have to attack him back.
So, like, we were talking about all these crazy mechanics. Like, give your, like, let's just do three. Each of you give 3 cards you have to look out for on this set. Like,
in
just 3.
Set?
There's a lot, but 3.
First off, Elspeth, Sun Champion.
Yeah.
Like, that card, all Planeswalkers are inherently good, but that one, it does cost a lot of mana, but its upside is just, it's the best, it's arguably the best win con in control.
Side note, I was reading something on Channel Fireball, it has better token output than Assemble the Legion until turn 8.
Yeah, it literally goes on par with one of the best token majors printed in a while.
Yeah.
So
that's...
The other one I want to kind of like is the new blue-black Planeswalker, just because it plays really well in the control mirrors. You get to exile cards off the top of people's decks, and you can play those cards.
Oh,
for, yeah, for as long as you... Or, sorry, you have to pay loyalty to cast them, but, like, when you're taking all their win cons, because this control deck we're talking about, I think it'll run, like, 3 Elspeth, an Aetherling, maybe 2 Jace. That's 6 win cons.
The one
I every other card is used to destroy creatures, counter spells, and draw cards.
The one I've been trying out is 2 Elspeth, 2 Aetherling.
Yeah, see? And if I nug even one of those with a +1, or if I nug 2, do you know how far ahead I am in that game? You can't win. You literally try to stop me from winning.
It's funny. The cards, like, there's so many big, huge, flashy, fancy cards. The ones I'm most excited about are for more constructed play that are just niche cards that I really like
to have. Oh my
god,
Whip of Erebos.
Yeah,
that
no, that's a
that
big card flashy
card. That
card
has my heart.
The 3 cards that I'm most excited about, Thoughtseize being reprinted. It's a great spell to have.
It's also really good for the modern format.
Yeah.
Just
well,
letting
expense-wise, yeah.
Well, it's also just like reprinting all the dual lands, right?
Makes it
easier for people to get into the format.
Since you already called Elspeth, I'm not going to include her on my list. Another one I really like is Gainsay, which is the 1 in a blue instant counter target blue spell.
Oh, yeah, the fact that this is blue spell and not just blue instant.
I really like that out of sideboards. I like the white hate card, but the other card I like, especially for eternal formats, is Swansong. That being the instant, one blue instant, counter target enchantment instant or sorcery spell, and its controller puts a 2/2 bird token in the
I like that it is one way to answer gods, but it don't feel like turning a god into a swan is like is like really how it works. Oh,
it'd be sweet though.
One thing that is really awesome about Theros is that it's flavorful.
Yeah.
So one thing about flavor is that like all the cards feel like what they should. Like
yeah.
The gods, the whole devotion thing, that feels like what a god what there's, should happen with a god.
There's yeah, a card right? called Chained to the Rocks. Literally, you have to enchant one of your mountains,
which are usually depicted by rocks.
Yeah.
Right. And so what you do is you take one of the creatures and exile it for as long as you control Chained to the Rocks.
So it's literally chained to your mountain.
Yeah. You literally grab one of their guys and chain it to the mountain.
Is that not awesome?
Pretty good.
Right? That's so sweet. And then there was one other that I was trying to think about, but like just having flavor in these things just yeah. feels great. Like the
it
other
brings
thing
a
is,
whole new dimension to the game.
It also helps you describe certain things, right?
Yeah,
like,
it does.
Just like, oh, how does devotion work? Well, imagine you're praying to Helioid, right? You just need a bunch of people for him to come down.
Yeah.
It's almost like Age of Empires, right?
Yeah, okay, okay.
You had to get the whole...
One thing I also really like is that you can chain to the rocks one of their creatures, and then you can use... I forget what the card's called, but it makes your mountain into a creature.
Oh.
So, you can, so basically what's happening is you can stick their guy to the top of a mountain and then attack them with the mountain. So it's just a great picture of their guy, like, chained to the top of the mountain, being flung around while the mountain's moving.
Like a flail with the creature at the end of it.
Watch, son, guy, I can't help it. Tell my mother I love her. Oh, God, my spleen.
So it seems you guys, it's going to be a crazy set, it seems, so far. Especially going into the
amazing.
Greek mythology. So it's next week. At four, next is next week the 21st? Yes, it is. This week is the 14th. So
yes.
It's next week.
Well, I just popped a half chub.
Just so realizing how close it is.
1 week for the pre-release. Like, if you guys are in this area, you have to come down here. Like, it's going to be a crazy experience. It's going to be a religious experience. See what I did right
yeah.
there with Theros.
Yeah. If you open a god, you will feel like a god.
And that's the best thing, is like, you're going to come out here. Come out, 490 Kerr Street. Oh, I said... I've done that in the first podcast. I go to Kerr Street because that's
yeah, because that's where it was.
490 Spears.
Yeah,
on,
past the A&W or past the subway, your choice. Depends
man,
on which way
you're
coming.
Out of, come look out, come
for
from
the giant
town,
chair.
Man. Yeah, look for the giant chair.
Right there is the giant chair at the end of the parking
you guys
lot.
Can come off the highway, get over here if you're out of the out of the town. Because literally, there is a big group of people here. We're gonna have over 100 people most likely,
and we are all very friendly.
And the nice thing is. Some people, like, who live in maybe 30 minutes away, 20 minutes away, they don't really have a big community. I went to a comic shop that was in, I was in London or whatever. I went to one of their things, and it was, like, 5 to 10 people, and that's, like, an average thing. Some people might not have it in their city. Someone might not be doing it. It's like, oh, Oakville. Well, it's, like, a 10-minute drive for me. And you'll be here for hours, man. Like, you're going to fall in love with the store when you come here, guys.
Yeah, I know the story of, you know, showing up to a shop at 12 p.m. and begging Rich to stay open.
That's the best thing. Like, guys, seriously, if you guys, even if you guys haven't really thought about it, you can come up to a pre-release. It's a pretty good starting ground, as Getty and Alex said earlier. So it's September 21st, and it starts at midnight here. There's one on Saturday and probably Sunday.
Well, there's actually two on Saturday. There's one at midnight.
Whoa.
And there's also going to be one at...
I consider that Friday.
Six.
I haven't slept
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, I consider it Friday, though, midnight.
I haven't slept yet.
Are there going to be any more?
Look at it. This guy
Sunday
wants more.
At 12 and Sunday at 6.
So there we go.
So you got Saturday at midnight, which is basically like Friday.
So there's going to be four chances to come here and play, guys.
Saturday at midnight.
Saturday at 6. Sunday at noon, Sunday at 6.
And
four chances to come out here. Come to all four if you want. Rich wouldn't mind. See, he doesn't mind.
It's 30 bucks for six packs. It's basically $5 a pack, and you're getting a special promo card that's only available now.
It's a sweet deal.
I'm probably going to spend, what's that? What's 30 times 4?
120.
I'm going to spend $120 that weekend.
Hopefully.
You know hopefully. Hopefully.
The best, too, is bring your friends with you. That's how I start. I brought my bunch of friends, and you might play against your friends, and it kind of makes you more comfortable for sure if you're not into the whole tournament atmosphere. So, again, guys, that's next Friday.
No,
you got a week to get down
here.
We
will help you build your deck.
You
seriously,
can look
come
for
find
any
me.
Of us here,
seriously,
man.
Come find me.
Eddie's
I love
the
building
shortest
decks.
Guy here. Yeah. Alex will probably be beside him and be significantly taller.
If you, know
the
who, if you know who Rob is, look at Rob and then look for someone shorter.
Just come in. You could yell either of our, any of our names here, and we'll be like, what do you want?
Another great opportunity is Tuesdays we have our casual night where you can just come out. We play any format, any
pants
cards.
Are not required.
Not required.
Not required.
It's casual.
It's actually encouraged not to bring pants.
Rich never does.
But yeah, we're rambling.
Yeah, if anyone's new to the game, we'll teach
you
on Tuesdays.
You gotta edit this, don't you?
That's right, man. I'm keeping my thing. We're
okay, Gus.
So I got some.
So what are we gonna eat for dinner?
Fucking bastard. So yeah,
you got Moe's across the street.
I do actually feel like pierogies.
Then go and eat pierogies because I think dinner is good about now. Okay, guys, again, next Friday, get here, play Magic, drink, but not here beforehand.
Boston Pieces just up the road. What are you talking about? There's also a bar right there. What is it called?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't know bars.
Yeah, it's this place Mom and Dad love to go, but you hate it. Shitty food.
Oh, filthy McNasty.
Yeah, filthy. I mean, great food. Shifty eyes.
Alrighty. So, I have been Scott here, with two dorks by the names of
Getty,
Alex,
and that's been Magic. Take it easy, guys, and hope to see you next week.
Outro.
I'm not working with... That's why they say don't work with animals or children. All right, guys. Take it easy.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.